Welcome to Israel and You, bringing Israel and the Jewish people into focus. Our host is Aaron David Free, president of Israel Team Advocates International. Aaron is an author, speaker, Bible teacher, and an advocate for Israel and the Jewish people on college campuses nationwide. This is Israel and You.
Today, our conversation is with Yehudit Barsky. Yehudit is a Middle East counterterrorism specialist who analyzes radical Islamist terrorist organizations and movements. Fluent in Arabic and Hebrew, she has concentrated on the convergence of Islamism with anti-Semitism. She regularly briefs law enforcement agencies, media, and Jewish communities on the implications of terrorism on U.S. policy. Ms. Barsky was the director of the Division of Middle East and International Terrorism at the American Jewish Committee for over a decade. With a focus on international security, Ms. Barsky conducts research on terrorist organizations, their methodologies, and the motivations of their followers. She analyzes the confluence of anti-Semitism and Islamism at ISGAP, the Institute for the Study of Global Anti-Semitism and Policy, where she serves as Senior Research Fellow. Ms. Barsky is a member of the Security Advisory Council of the Community Security Service, which has trained over 10,000 community security volunteers nationwide. Ms. Barsky holds a master's degree in international relations and Near Eastern studies and a bachelor's degree in international relations and Jewish history and civilization, both from New York University. She is a founder of the Secure Community Network and served as its senior advisor and Middle East specialist for intelligence and analysis. Ms. Barsky is the author of Hamas, the Islamic Resistance Movement of Palestine, Hezbollah, the Party of God, Al-Qaeda, Iran, and Hezbollah, the Islamic Jihad Movement in Palestine, terrorist incidents and attacks against Jews and Israelis in the U.S. 1969 to 2016, and Islamist anti-Semitism in the United States. So, Yehudit, welcome to the podcast today.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, so we're in a very serious situation here in Israel. And just a few days ago, the defense minister of Israel, the IDF defense minister, Gallant, said that Iran sent over into Israel 500 ballistic and cruise missiles and attack drones. And this is a new number. It was originally 300 to 350, but now when you add up all the rocket fire from Hezbollah and Hamas and different proxies of Iran, it's at least 500 aerial attack ballistic missiles and drones. So how do we get to this point? I mean, the world right now is looking at Iran and wondering, I mean, this is the first time they've launched ballistic missiles from their own territory towards Israel. So Yehudit, how did we get here?
So this is a part of the history of the radical Islamic Republic of Iran, and this is the history of the Islamic Revolution of the Ayatollah Khomeini, who from the very beginning targeted Israel as the enemy of Iran. And again, this is this is extremist ideology that does not reflect the Iranian people. It reflects the Iranian regime. And the focus of the Ayatollah Khomeini, based on the ideology of his own ideology, essentially places Israel as the obstacle to the final revelation of the end of days in Shia Islamist extremist ideology. So from the standpoint of the Ayatollah Khomeini, he has an ideology, but he brought in a theological concept that has existed in Shiism for since the beginning of its break off from the Sunnis, to essentially say that there is a hidden imam, who's the 12th imam, who's the leader of the Shia Muslims, who has gone into occultation. He was a person who lived, and his name was Muhammad, and he went into occultation. No one knows where he is. There is a place in Iran where he's supposed to be hidden underneath a mosque. There where people go and pray that he should be revealed. But basically, he's supposed to come back, and that's supposed to be the end of days when everyone, all of the forces of evil are destroyed. All of the forces of disbelief are destroyed. And from the standpoint of the Ayatollah Khomeini and this ideology, which he brought in this idea into his ideology and made it into a political issue, because Israel did not exist when the 12th Imam lived, nor did Israel exist for all of the centuries until the 20th century, but basically painted Israel as the target and the obstacle to the end of days. So once, from his point of view, he would explain, once Israel would be destroyed, then it would be the end of days, and all people in the world would become Muslims. And that would be the vision of the end of days. So he included this as part of his ideology. And so from the very beginning, they began to target Israel. And from the standpoint of putting ideology into action, they started to create organizations. So one of the first organizations was to create the organization Hezbollah in Lebanon, who are Shia followers of the Ayatollah Khomeini, the late Ayatollah Khomeini. And essentially, Hezbollah began as a terror organization. Of course, today it is way beyond that. It is a militarized terror organization trained by Iran as an army. And then we also have other organizations such as Hamas, although they're a Sunni Muslim. They have different ideology than Iran, but receiving aid from them and training from them. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad as well, who are Sunni followers of Iran, of the Ayatollah Khomeini. And then the Houthis and Iranian militias in Iraq. So the strategy of Iran has been to create an encirclement of Israel on each of its borders. So you have in the north Hezbollah, you have in the south Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, you have in the West Bank terror cells of Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and you also have the Iranians have also attracted people from the Fatah movement, from Mahmoud Abbas's Fatah movement as well, to their ranks in the West Bank. And then there's also been activity on the Jordanian border trying to smuggle arms into the West Bank via the Jordanian border and make trouble in Jordan as well from Iran. So I'm sorry to go on for so long, but essentially this is a very long term strategy of the Islamic Republic of Iran, basically making its ideology come to fruition.
I heard the Iranians say yesterday that their battleground is Tel Aviv. And so they've always proclaimed Israel is the little Satan and the United States is the big Satan. So it's amazing all the puzzle pieces you just talked about that brings us to this point. And thank you for that understanding of why we are where we are today. It's like maybe in America we've had our heads in the sand, not really understanding the ideology of Iran, thinking that they're going to want peace with us. But we've been thinking a long time that, Iran is going nuclear, but in this last attack from Iranian territory, sending, hundreds of aerial missiles and drones and ballistic missiles, cruise missiles towards Israel, how does that change? I mean, we weren't really thinking they were going ballistic. We thought they were going to go nuclear.
Well, there's an unfortunate aspect of the focus of the United States and Western countries in general, and that is laser focus on Iran going nuclear, but not dealing with the fact that Iran has been building ballistic missiles all of this time. In other words, the idea that you would be able to somehow as well contain Iran and ignore ballistic missiles and drones and that type of capability is something that I think we have two new dates in the calendar from the standpoint of what the perspective of the Iranians, and I can go to the perspective of the West in a moment, but from the perspective of the Iranians, they looked at October 7th as an incredible success, as an incredible jihadist victory for their side, a historic day, with unspeakable violence and carnage, murder, rape, as we've seen, mm-hmm. And then the next from their point of view, having done that, the next thing was because they do believe, and Hassan Nasrallah, it's usually he who says this, he usually compares Israel and believes Israel. He's usually giving speeches about Israel more often than the Iranian leaders, but they certainly give speeches as well. But Hassan Nasrallah likes to talk about Israel as a spider web, that it's nothing, that Israel is nothing, and they could be just simply destroyed so easily. And the Iranians certainly were surprised by April 14th. They did not. They really thought that this was going to be the next step in their victory, and I don't think that anyone has really absorbed this and can have a complete full analysis of where do we go from here right now. But this is certainly another shock to the system in the Middle East, and a shock to them, believing that they were on their way, that they were on their way to obliterating Israel, as they've been talking about, and what they've been doing for many, many years now, which we in the West unfortunately have ignored. The Iranians have military parades, and during those parades, they have missiles that they were displaying, and each year they would have new and improved models of those missiles, given wow. different names, etc. And on the missiles they were writing death to Israel, death to America. And wow. for a lot of us in the West, we would look at that as hyperbole.
Right.
And I think now we really need to look in the mirror and realize that this is a 45-year project that the Iranian wow. regime has been engaging in and investing in. I really mean investing, because that means that the GDP of that country is being used to build military capability rather than feed its own people and take care of its own people, which is why we've seen the demonstrations in the streets, not just over how women are treated, but also because of the economic situation in that country.
So what you're saying is there's been a shadow war. And have you said, do you think it's 45-year shadow war where Iran is weaponizing its proxies like Hezbollah and Hamas? Is that what's going on, Yehudi?
That's what has gone on. Okay. So when you have a war by Hezbollah, which is a proxy of Iran, I mean, trained by Iran, funded by Iran, the ideology is that of Iran. It's perhaps not so much of a shadow war. The more of a shadow war has been behind the scenes when agents of the Iranian regime have attempted to, and in some cases succeeded, in carrying out attacks against Israelis and Jewish communities around the world, most notably in Buenos Aires in 1994, there were two bombings, one of the Israeli embassy there, and as well the Amia Jewish Community Center. So this is something that is quite, people may not recall that right now. There are some people who might, but this has been part of that war. And of course, there's been shadow war of Israel attacking leaders of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards who've been trying to carry out attacks against Israel. whether it be abroad or helping Hezbollah or organizing proxies. So this has been going on for a number of years. What's new here is direct attack against Israeli territory coming from Iranian territory, and that means that the rules of the game, so to speak, have changed.
Yeah. You know, on Saturday, as we all, you know, last weekend, we were all waiting for Iran to attack. We didn't know how they were going to attack. And I was worried, of course, everyone was worried. But what was interesting to me, Yehudit, was that you had this coalition that I didn't know they were, you know, even together Saturday morning, but it was the United States, Britain, France, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia, U.S. Central Command, that joined together to shoot down these missiles. So talk to us about that. I mean, is that a new development? Do you think that coalition will grow? Will other Arab countries jump in to fight Iran, which is really against anyone that doesn't believe in the radical ideology? So Iran is upsetting the entire region. So do you think that coalition will grow?
So I definitely think the coalition will grow, particularly because of the results of April 14th. In other words, the fact that the Iranians were not successful, mm-hmm. and the fact that all of the participants could see the positive results and outcome that they were able to defend the region, not just Israel, there were the other countries as well. This is a coalition that's been growing over the last number of years. There's been a growing recognition by countries in the region, because they've all been targeted by Iran in one way or another. There are all kinds of efforts. Many of them are covert efforts by Iran to create destabilization in neighboring countries and support extremist movements in neighboring countries. And so this is something that's become very evident to countries in the region that Iran has become a threat to them.
Mm-hmm. You know, for a long time, Yehudit, we in the West, you know, we've been told we're fighting a war on terror. But I don't know if terror is the real enemy in this situation. From what you're saying, we're fighting a religious ideology. And I remember when, in history, when Germany would cross borders with their swift moving tanks, they called it a blitzkrieg. So blitzkrieg was a tactic of war, and terror is a tactic of war. Terror is not the enemy. And what I hear you saying is the real enemy here is an ideology. In this case, it's a theology, and it's the theology of radical Islamism fomented by Iran in the region. And they want to destroy Western civilization. And I don't know if everyone in America and the West really understands that. And first, they want to take back all the lands they once occupied. And in the Quran, that's an offense to Allah that Jews even exist in the land of Israel. And so that's why Israel is on the target list. But talk to us a little more about this whole concept of the 12th Imam. Iran, they're called the Twelvers. And the reason why they're fomenting hatred and you know, attacking Israel is because of this, what you have said is the end time industry that Iran is building here. This whole ideology that they must create chaos and war for the 12th Imam to return. So talk to us a little about how that theology drives this terror objective in the Middle East.
So this has become more evident in, I would say, the last 15 years, perhaps. It became much more evident during the regime of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the former president of Iran, who is much more vocal and much more direct in promoting what they call Mahdiism. So this was always part of the ideology of the Ayatollah Khomeini's Islamist revolution, and he wrote about it, and he incorporated it into his writings. And one of the things that that he incorporated into his writings to include this idea was to essentially say the formation of this, again, the Islamic revolutionary government of Iran is the first divine government on earth. In other words, from their point of view, it was for them the changing of the Islamic millennium, not 2024, but according in from their calendar, the Islamic revolution of Iran occurred at that time, and so the establishment of the government of Iran, the Islamic revolutionary government of Iran, from the perspective of the Ayatollah Khomeini, was a divine sign, and therefore it was a divinely appointed government, and therefore this is a sign of the advent of the Mahdi. The Mahdi is part of this. It's more correctly the Imam Mahdi. And so this idea was, now we have to make this happen. We have to work toward making this happen. And the way that you make this happen is what happens at the end of times? What happens in the end of days? So first you have the changing of the millennium, which this huge event occurred. But then you also have another event that occurred, which was the assassination of Anwar al-Sadat in Egypt, which energized some people in Egypt as well to follow some of the ideology of the Ayatollah Khomeini, which sounds strange, even though they're Sunni, but that happened as well. So there was a lot of borrowing of this ideology throughout the Middle East, but most strongly, obviously, among people who would follow the Ayatollah Khomeini. And so Ahmadinejad brought this to the fore much more strongly. There, it was always part of the promotion, the ideological promotion of the regime. But he would openly talk about we have to work to bring the Mahdi. And there were various institutions and schools that Ahmadinejad himself would attend or be part of in order to promote the idea that we're making efforts to study about bringing the Mahdi, or we're going to bring the Mahdi, and this is something that's been going on for a number of years. It's gotten to be a little more in the shadows after he left the presidency, but certainly it's still there. And again, it's been incredibly energized by the events of October 7th.
Yeah, I remember. I don't know when he was president. I wrote this down. It was probably 10 years ago. And Ahmadinejad said, "I've signed a covenant with Mahdi. I've pledged myself to his work, and his work is wiping Israel off the map." And I remember that was kind of his catchphrase through his whole presidency. You know, we're going to wipe Israel off the map. And, you know, my concern is that if Iran is able to develop a nuclear weapon, do you, in your estimation, you know, we have this idea when we talk about nuclear power, nuclear weapons, mutually assured destruction. And are the Iranians worried about mutual assured destruction, or do they believe that, you know, they can use a nuclear missile against Israel, and do they care if Israel fires back, or do they simply believe that the Mahdi will supernaturally protect them? I mean, what is their ideology when it comes to mutually assured destruction?
So mutually assured destruction comes from the Cold War period, referring to the United States and the Soviet Union, both of which are, I wouldn't say necessarily guided by religious religious ideology. In other words, you can have people who are religious in both countries, but not, but their policy isn't a religious ideology based on theological concepts. It's based on pragmatism and other ideas. So you don't have that, you don't have the element that we're talking about with regard to Iran. And then the other concept with regard to mutually assured destruction is that the fear that if you fire a nuclear weapon, mm-hmm. that the other side will at the same time fire a nuclear weapon at you, and you're both going to be destroyed. So what's, you know, it's sort of, you're both canceling, as we would say now in 2024, you're both canceling each other out. The fear of that is not what is a motivation in this ideology of the Iranians. From their point of view, and the late scholar Bernard Lewis pointed this out, that from their point of view, there is no such thing as a mutually assured destruction that would cause them to be afraid of it. That in fact it would be an incentive in order to achieve what they want. That they really feel that it would be the end of times, and that as long as they would be able to destroy what they consider to be the evil force in the world, meaning Israel. And being, they believe that Israel is part of the United States. That this is not something that they're concerned about. They're not concerned about mutually assured destruction because they would become martyrs, and therefore they would receive their just reward. So it's from their point of view, there is an incentive rather than a disincentive to do so.
I completely agree with what you said about the two dates, Yehudit. October 7th and April 14th, April 14th being the day that Iran sent over 500 missiles towards Israel, many of them from their own territory. And I remember a historian, his name was Christopher Lash, and he said, every day we get up and tell ourselves lies so we can live. You know, we play a round of golf, we take the kids to school, and I would agree with that, you know, we just kind of want to live with our heads in the sand, not really recognizing the threat of Iran to the entire world. And we don't live in such a time that we can just go through life not really understanding what is happening, that we are in a war, not with terror. Terror is a tactic of the enemy, that we are in a war with a radical religious ideology that wants to establish a global caliphate, that wants to bring destruction and chaos upon the world so they can bring back their Messiah, the 12th Imam. So would you agree with that, that we've been kind of just blinded by the threat of Iran the last, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years?
Actually, I would say we've been ignoring what Iran has been doing for 45 years. Wow. Because we're Westerners, and we would like to look at ourselves and see other people in the same mirror as ourselves. Mm-hmm. In other words, the other people want the same things that we want. And unfortunately, that's not the case. We would like to have a nice life, and we'd like to have our children go to, be well educated and go to good schools and not hurt other people. But unfortunately, there are people who believe in extremist ideologies, who believe that other people don't have the right to live at all. And this is something that is perhaps we've been ignoring it for so long that I'm sure for some people it is a shock, mm-hmm. but for me, it's not a shock to see this, simply because they've been talking about it. They've been openly talking about it. They keep talking about it. They're proud to talk about it. And I think the problem from our perspective is that we either refuse to hear it or we can't hear it because we don't want to believe. And I understand why, because we're Westerners, but we don't want to believe that somebody wants to do that.
Yeah, I think so much in our press, you know, Israel should just not retaliate against Iran. They should just, you know, bury this thing, let it pass and go on living. But the Israelis know they're facing an existential threat from Iran, especially if Iran goes nuclear. And they're not worried about mutually assured destruction. They will send a nuclear weapon, and they would welcome the destruction that it would cause Israel, and they would believe that they'll either be destroyed and the 12th Imam will come, or the 12th Imam will protect them, you know, at his return. It'll be something that'll usher in his return. So for Israel, knowing they're facing this religious ideology, they're facing an existential threat. And we in America, we in the West, the Western world is facing an existential threat from Iran. So very, very interesting discussion, Yehudi. And man, I so appreciate your insights, your knowledge of this issue. And I just wish that more in the West would know what you know, because I don't want to just get up every day, like Christopher Lash said, you know, tell myself I just need to keep living and not really face the issue that the world is facing right now, which is the great threat of the Islamic Republic of Iran. So, Yehudit, thank you again for being my guest, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.